When you sent over this report, the one about the what was it, the relational inclusion pilot program? Yeah, in Tankside. I was hooked. It's in the UK, right?
Yeah, Tameside, UK. It's fascinating stuff.
Really is. We're talking about a place dealing with some serious social issues, poverty, deprivation, the kind of stuff that can really impact
Oh,
kids.
absolutely, especially in the school setting.
Yeah, makes you wonder, can a new approach to education?
They call it relational inclusion.
Right. Relational inclusion, can that actually make a difference for these kids?
That's the question this report really dives into.
And they don't just talk theory.
No.
They get into like the nitty-gritty, like implementation, the challenges, the successes, even some unexpected outcomes. Like, imagine hearing primary school kids using the word dysregulated
Yeah.
to describe their feelings.
Remarkable, isn't it?
It really is. And some schools saw like huge drops in suspensions after implementing the program. Even teachers started noticing positive changes,
Oh, yeah.
not just in the students.
In themselves and how they work together.
It's like,
It's like this ripple effect of positive change. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's back up a little, make sure we're all on the same page. What exactly is relational inclusion?
so at its core, relational inclusion starts with the understanding that trauma, it has a profound impact on behavior. When kids have experienced difficult things, it can really manifest in how they learn, how they interact, how they cope with challenges.
So it's not about like being lenient with kids or lowering expectations.
Well, not at
It's
all.
about understanding the
What?
root causes of their behavior,
Exactly.
responding in a way that's both supportive and empowering.
Precisely. It's about creating a school culture where connection comes first,
Connection.
a culture of empathy, understanding, and genuine care.
Okay, that all sounds great in theory, but how did they actually put this into practice? What did it look like on the ground, you know? Well, the pilot program was a collaboration between the Victorious Academies Trust that oversees a bunch of primary schools in Tameside and the Tameside Pupil Referral Service. They even co-authored a book based on their work.
Get out.
Yeah, it's called Educating Everyone. It
What?
might be worth checking out if you want to go deeper.
A book deal. So, how did they roll this out across an entire school system? Was it like a top-down mandate, or do they take a more collaborative
They
approach?
had a very intentional strategy. Each school had what they called a relational inclusion champion
Oh, I see.
who got specialized training and then led workshops for both staff and students.
Okay, so you have someone there to like champion the cause, guide the implementation, and provide ongoing support. Makes sense. But I'm guessing it wasn't all smooth sailing, was it?
You're absolutely right. Anytime you try to implement change on this scale, you're bound to encounter some bumps. And the report is refreshingly honest about the challenges they faced. For example, some schools really struggled to find teachers who had the bandwidth to take on the RIC role, given their already demanding workloads.
Yeah, for sure.
In one case, a teaching assistant was appointed as the RIC.
Really? A teaching assistant.
Yeah, it's actually one of the highlights of the report.
Interesting.
There was no difference in the quality of the training or interventions delivered by the teaching assistant
Wow.
compared to the teachers who were RICs. It challenges our assumptions about who can be an effective leader and advocate for change.
That's pretty amazing.
It
It
is.
speaks to the power of passion and commitment, regardless of your official title or role. What other challenges did they encounter? I'm sure there were a few more.
Oh, definitely. Sometimes RICs left their positions or had to take extended leaves of absence, which left schools scrambling to find replacements.
Yeah, I bet.
And there were definitely some initial misconceptions about what relational inclusion actually entails. Some staff viewed it as being too lenient, which is not. It's about creating a supportive and structured environment, but it's also about clear expectations and accountability.
Okay, so it sounds like there were some growing pains, which, I mean, that's to be expected, but they clearly managed to work through these challenges because they gathered enough data to write a whole report and even a book. So let's get to the heart of it.
Yeah.
How did they decide which kids to focus on? Did every student in the system participate?
They took a targeted approach. Each school identified a cohort of children based on a few key factors. First, they considered adverse childhood experiences, or
ACEs.
ACEs, yeah.
ACEs, that's such an important concept. It recognizes that what happens outside of school, things like abuse or neglect or household dysfunction, can have a huge
Yeah.
impact on a child's well-being and ability to learn.
It's about seeing the whole child, not just their behavior in the classroom.
Exactly.
They also looked at attendance records.
Okay.
Because inconsistent attendance can be a sign of underlying issues.
Yeah.
And finally, they used teacher observations of behavior to identify kids who might be struggling.
So they were really trying to get a holistic picture of each child's needs and challenges. And how did they measure the program's impact? What kind of data did they collect?
They cast a wide net.
Yeah.
They looked at attendance records, suspensions, exclusions, something called SEMH toolkit assessments.
Okay.
And even feedback from both staff and students.
SEMH. Remind me what that stands for again. I'm sure you explained it earlier, but my brain's already buzzing with new information.
No worries. It stands for social, emotional, and mental health.
Right.
The SEMH toolkit helps assess things like a child's ability to regulate their emotions, their social skills, and their overall well-being.
Okay.
It's a way to get a more nuanced understanding of how kids are doing.
Got it.
Beyond just academic performance.
So they weren't just looking at test scores and grades.
Right.
They were trying to capture the whole picture of a child's development. Okay, I'm ready for the good stuff. What did the data tell them? Did this relational inclusion thing actually work?
Overall, the results were incredibly encouraging.
Lay it on me.
Most schools saw a decrease in exclusions and suspensions.
Okay.
And many saw improvements in attendance.
Wow.
The SEMH toolkit data also showed positive shifts in student behavior and emotional well-being.
So we're talking real change here.
Yeah, but I think what's even more compelling are the individual stories, the case studies, that really bring these findings to life.
Oh, I love a good story.
Right.
Tell me everything.
Well, for instance, at Aldwin Primary, they had children creating inner self posters where they explored their feelings and talk about turning negative thoughts into positive ones.
It's amazing to see kids that young engaging in that kind of self-reflection.
It really is.
It's like they're being given the tools and the language to understand and manage their own emotions.
Yeah.
Which is a skill that will serve them well throughout their lives. What about the other schools? Any other standout stories from those case studies?
Absolutely. And Arundale, there was a student who at first was really emotionally withdrawn and wouldn't participate in group activities. But as the sessions progressed, he started to open up, express himself more freely, and even engage with his peers in a more positive way.
So it's like the program created a safe space for him to be himself.
It seems like it.
It's so powerful to see how a shift in approach can create such a profound shift in a child's behavior and well-being. It makes you wonder, like, what might have happened if he hadn't had access to this program?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
It highlights the importance of early intervention.
Right.
And creating supportive environments for kids who've experienced trauma.
Okay, so we're seeing real change at the individual level. What about on a school-wide level? Do they notice any broader shifts in school culture or climate?
Yes, definitely. Gamesley Primary saw overall improvements
mm-hmm.
in the students' social skills mm-hmm. and their ability to regulate their emotions, particularly when it came to like handling transitions or dealing with consequences.
Interesting.
It's like the whole school environment shifted towards a more supportive and understanding place.
Yeah, that's incredible. It seems like this approach isn't just about managing behavior. It's about creating a culture of empathy and compassion that benefits everyone in the school community.
Right.
And one of the things that really struck me in the report was how quickly these kids adopted the language of regulation, using phrases like dysregulated to describe their own feelings.
Remarkable, isn't it?
It is.
It shows that even young children can grasp these concepts.
Yeah.
And use them to understand and articulate their own experiences.
Yeah.
And it's not just the kids. Staff at several of the schools reported feeling more connected to their students and to each other.
Wow.
They described a more collaborative and supportive work environment, which is so essential for teacher well-being and retention.
That's so important.
It is.
When teachers feel supported, they're better able to support their students. It creates this positive feedback loop that benefits everyone. But you mentioned something earlier about unexpected outcomes.
Yes.
What were some of the surprises they uncovered?
Well, one of the most unexpected findings was that the positive changes weren't limited to the students. Teachers started to notice positive changes in themselves.
Really?
Yeah, and in their relationships with each other.
Wow.
It seems that focusing on connection and empathy had a ripple effect that extended beyond the targeted student groups.
So this approach isn't just about fixing kids.
No.
It's about creating a more human-centered and compassionate culture overall. Which benefits everyone.
It really is.
That's a powerful idea.
It makes you wonder, if this approach can transform schools, what other settings could it benefit?
Right.
Homes, workplaces, even entire communities.
That's a great question to ponder. But before we get too carried away, let's circle back to some of the specifics about how they made this program work. Because let's be real, not every school has the resources or the expertise to create this kind of whole system change.
Yeah, right.
So let's dig into those specifics. What kind of training did they provide to the staff? Was it like a one-time workshop, or did they take a more ongoing approach?
They took a multifaceted approach to training, focusing on equipping staff with a deep understanding of trauma and its impact on children's behavior.
Okay.
They provided in-depth sessions on adverse childhood experiences.
ACEs.
ACEs, yeah.
Right.
And they even dove into the neuroscience behind it all, explaining how toxic stress can literally impact brain development.
That's so crucial.
Yes.
Because if you don't understand the why behind a child's behavior, it's easy to resort to punishment or other traditional discipline methods that might actually make things worse.
Exactly. And the training went beyond just theory.
Good.
They introduced staff to practical concepts like the window of tolerance, which helps explain how kids can move in and out of states of emotional regulation.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Break that down for me. What's the window of tolerance all about?
So imagine a window.
Okay.
When a child is within that window, they're able to learn, engage, and handle everyday challenges.
Gotcha.
But when they're pushed outside of that window, maybe by stress or triggers, they become dysregulated. Their behavior might change.
See.
They might become withdrawn, agitated, or even lash out.
And that's where those self-regulation strategies come in, right?
Exactly.
The tools and techniques that help kids bring themselves back into that window of tolerance.
Precisely. The program equips staff with a whole toolbox of techniques to help kids manage their emotions and regain a sense of calm.
Like what?
Things like deep breathing exercises.
Yeah.
Mindfulness practices. Even just providing a safe space for them to, like, decompress and collect themselves.
So they're giving kids agency over their own emotional states.
Very much so.
That's empowering.
And the report includes detailed descriptions of the actual workshops they did with the kids.
Oh, cool.
They covered 5 core competencies: self-awareness, self-management, social skills, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making.
Mm.
These are life skills that go way beyond the classroom.
Absolutely.
These are the skills that help us navigate the complexities of life, build healthy relationships, and make positive choices.
And it sounds like they made it fun and engaging, too.
They did.
Which is so important for keeping kids motivated and interested.
Oh, yeah. They used activities like Feelings Bingo to help kids identify and label their emotions.
No.
They had them create inner self posters where they could express their thoughts and feelings visually. They even used games like the Human Knot game to teach problem solving and cooperation.
Okay, I'm going to need you to explain that one. What's the Human Knot game?
So it's a fun and engaging activity where a group of people stand in a circle, close their eyes, and reach out to grab the hands of 2 other people.
Okay.
Then, without letting go, they have to work together to untangle themselves.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
It teaches kids how to navigate challenges and work through frustration in a collaborative way.
That sounds like a great way to build teamwork and communication skills, too.
It is.
Okay, so they're teaching kids these essential skills, but they're also modeling them for the staff, right? After all, you can't teach kids to manage their emotions if you haven't mastered it yourself.
100%.
Right.
They encourage staff to practice self-awareness and emotional regulation themselves. They emphasize the importance of modeling these skills for students.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kids learn by watching the adults in their lives.
It all comes back to that connection piece, doesn't it?
It does.
You can't create a culture of empathy and understanding if you're not embodying those values yourself.
Exactly. And they didn't stop at workshops and training.
Oh.
They also looked at their school policies, especially the behavior policies, and said, okay, how can we revise these to be more aligned with this relational approach?
That's huge.
It's
because policies can either support or undermine a positive school culture. They can either create a sense of safety and belonging, or they can perpetuate a cycle of punishment and control.
Right.
And they use the SEMETCH toolkit, those social, emotional, and mental health assessments, to track progress and see how these changes were actually impacting the kids.
It's about being intentional and data-driven.
That's smart. It's not enough to just implement a program. You need to measure its effectiveness and make adjustments along the way.
Exactly.
Okay, this is all starting to paint a really clear picture of what relational inclusion looks like in action. But I'm eager to hear more about those specific school cases. You know, those stories really bring the data to life.
I agree.
So let's dive in.
The case studies are fascinating.
Okay.
Let's start with Aldwin Primary.
Okay.
They have a really compelling case study about a year six pupil, we'll call him BC, who had experienced a lot of trauma in his life. Parental loss, domestic violence, exposure to gang activity. It's heartbreaking.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I imagine those experiences had a huge impact on BC's behavior at school.
Definitely. Initially, BC was very guarded and self-reliant, showing signs of what's called avoidant attachment.
Meaning he had difficulty trusting and forming close bonds with others.
Exactly.
It's a common coping mechanism for kids who've experienced trauma. They learn to protect themselves by pushing people away.
Right. But over time, through the relational inclusion program, BC started to accept support from staff and began developing healthier relationships.
That's a beautiful example.
It is.
Of how this approach can help kids break down those walls and start to let people in. Did they mention what strategies worked particularly well for BC? I'm always curious about the specifics.
They did.
Oh, good.
The report mentions that BC responded well to activities that kept his hands busy. And he really took to calming techniques like tapping exercises.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
When you're feeling overwhelmed or anxious, having something to focus on can help ground you and bring you back into the present moment.
Yeah.
And tapping exercises are a great way to release tension and regulate your nervous system.
It's a reminder that every child is different.
Right.
And what works for one might not work for another. It's about finding the right tools and strategies to meet their individual needs.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things I appreciate about this report. They don't present a one-size-fits-all approach. They emphasize the importance of flexibility and adaptation.
Okay. You mentioned some other interesting school cases, too. What about Arundel Primary? What happened there?
Well, remember that student I mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
The one who was initially emotionally distant and wouldn't participate?
Yeah.
His name was ARP1.
Yeah.
And he was in year four.
Right, right. What kind of progress did he make?
It's pretty incredible. By the end of the program, he was actively participating in group work.
Wow.
Sharing ideas with his peers.
Yeah.
And even expressing his emotions openly.
That's a huge shift.
It is.
It's like he was finally feeling safe and supported enough to be himself. What a testament to the power of creating a welcoming and inclusive environment.
And his CMH scores, those social, emotional, and mental health scores, improved significantly.
So they have quantifiable data to back up these anecdotal observations.
It's not just subjective impressions.
That's impressive.
They're seeing real, measurable progress. And that's one of the things that makes this report so compelling.
Yeah.
They're not just relying on anecdotes. They're backing up their claims with hard data.
Absolutely. Data is essential. For understanding the impact of any intervention or program, it helps us move beyond opinions and assumptions.
Yeah.
And ground our conclusions in evidence.
Right. And the data in this report is really compelling. They're not just seeing positive changes in individual students.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing school-wide improvements in things like attendance, suspensions, and exclusions.
Okay. I'm dying to hear about the rest of those case studies. What stood out to you? What other examples of transformation did you see?
Well, Discovery Academy had some really fascinating findings. They focused on a year five student, DAP4, who had an avoidant attachment style, meaning he struggled to connect with others and often acted out to get attention.
It sounds like he was trying to meet his need for connection in a way that wasn't working for him or the people around him.
It's right.
A classic example of how kids who've experienced trauma can sometimes exhibit behaviors that push people away, even though deep down they're craving love and belonging.
Exactly. Yeah. But through the relational inclusion workshops, he started to understand his own emotions better. And even recognize the impact of his behavior on others.
So he was developing empathy, which is such a crucial skill for building healthy relationships. And did his behavior improve?
Yes. His CMH scores went up significantly.
Wow.
It's amazing to see how this approach can help kids who've been labeled as difficult or disruptive actually thrive. It's about changing the narrative and recognizing their potential.
It really challenges those labels, doesn't it?
It does.
It shows that behavior is often a form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can understand what a child is trying to communicate, we can better support them. Okay, we've talked about Aldwin, Arundel, and Discovery. What about Gamesley Primary? What did they find?
Gamesley saw some really interesting improvements in the children's ability to manage change and deal with consequences.
Okay.
They also made strides in their social skills. which is so important for navigating the complexities of life.
Interesting. So it sounds like they were able to address some of the core challenges that often come with trauma, you know, that difficulty with transitions and emotional regulation. What were some of the methods they used to achieve these results?
Well, they implemented something called trauma-informed physical education.
Trauma-informed physical education.
Yeah, which recognizes that physical activity can be a powerful tool for emotional regulation.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about trauma-informed physical education. How does it work?
It's based on the understanding that trauma can be held in the body. So they used movement and physical activities to help kids release stress and tension in a safe and controlled environment.
Makes sense.
They also focused on creating a predictable and structured environment.
Yeah.
Which is so important for kids who've experienced trauma. It's about creating a sense of safety and control, which allows them to relax and engage more fully.
When you feel safe and grounded in your body, you're better able to manage your emotions and engage in learning. Did they see positive results from this approach?
They did. Staff reported fewer incidents of physical aggression and a calmer overall atmosphere at the school.
It's amazing what can happen when you address both the physical and emotional needs of kids.
It really is.
It sounds like they really took a holistic approach, recognizing that mind and body are interconnected. And one thing that stood out to me throughout this entire report is the adaptability and creativity of the schools involved. They weren't just following a rigid script. They were constantly adjusting and tweaking the program to fit the unique needs of their students and staff.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's a testament to their dedication and willingness to experiment and find what works best for their communities.
Okay, we've talked about anecdotal evidence and case studies, but I'm also interested in the hard data. What do the numbers tell us about the program's overall effectiveness?
The report includes a lot of detailed data on attendance, exclusions, and suspensions across all 11 schools in the pilot program, and the trends are really encouraging.
So give me the highlights. What were the most significant findings?
Well, let's start with exclusions. There were 4 total exclusions across all 11 schools in the 2022-2023 school year. That number dropped to 1 exclusion in 2023-2024, and then to 0 exclusions in 2024-2025.
Wow, that's a dramatic decrease.
It is.
It seems to suggest that this relational approach is making a difference in creating a more inclusive and supportive environment for all students. What about suspensions? Did they see similar trends there?
They did. In 2022-2023, there were a total of 51 suspensions across the 11 schools. That number actually increased slightly to 55 in 2023-2024.
Oh.
Remember, they were still figuring things out. It takes time to implement a program like this effectively. But then it plummeted to just 21 suspensions in 2024-2025.
Okay.
So while there were some initial bumps in the road, the overall trend is a clear reduction in suspensions.
That's encouraging.
It is.
So even though it wasn't a perfect linear progression, the overall data suggests that this approach is leading to fewer punitive measures and more supportive interventions. What about attendance? Did they see improvements there too?
The attendance data is a bit more nuanced. The overall average attendance across the schools hovered around 94% for all 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some interesting variations within individual schools.
Okay.
For example, Holden Clough Primary School saw a significant improvement in attendance, going from 93.6% in 2022-2023 to 95.9% in 2024-2025.
That's pretty impressive.
It is.
It suggests that this approach can have a positive impact on attendance, but it's not a guaranteed outcome.
Right.
It probably depends on a lot of other factors,
yeah,
specific to each school and community. But the fact that so many schools saw positive changes across these various metrics, exclusions, suspensions, and attendance, suggests that the relational inclusion program was having a real impact.
I agree.
Yeah.
It seems like this shift in approach from punishment to understanding, from control to connection, is creating a ripple effect of positive change throughout these schools.
Yeah, but I have to ask, what about the schools that didn't do as well? The report mentions a few that struggled with the program, right?
Yes, there were a few schools that faced more significant challenges in implementing the program.
Let's talk about them. What made their experience different? What obstacles did they encounter?
Well, each school had its own unique set of circumstances.
Yeah.
For example, Lyndhurst Primary School had a particularly difficult time finding a teacher who could dedicate the time and energy to being the relational inclusion champion.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a demanding role,
It is.
especially on top of all the other responsibilities teachers already have. It requires a lot of passion, commitment, and organizational support.
Exactly. And the report also highlights a few other common challenges.
Okay.
Some schools struggled with staff buy-in. There were misconceptions about what relational inclusion actually means, with some staff seeing it as being too lenient or permissive.
Which, of course, it's not.
Right.
It's about setting clear boundaries and expectations, but it's also about understanding the root causes of behavior and responding in a way that's supportive and restorative.
Right. It's a delicate balance. And some schools faced logistical challenges, like scheduling difficulties,
Makes sense.
finding time for workshops and training sessions, especially when you're trying to fit it into an already packed school schedule, can be a major hurdle.
Absolutely. And I imagine burnout and staff turnover played a role too.
Definitely. A few schools had their RICs leave mid-program, which created disruptions and required them to find replacements, get them up to speed.
That makes sense.
That kind of turnover can really derail a program, especially one that relies so heavily on relationships and consistency.
It sounds like implementing a program like this requires a lot of flexibility
Yeah.
and adaptability, both from the schools themselves and from the people leading the program.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes real commitment from everyone involved.
So we've been talking about relational inclusion and how this pilot program in Tameside is putting it into practice. But before we go any further, I think it's worth pausing to really appreciate how groundbreaking this approach is. I mean, they're essentially saying that the traditional model of school discipline, with its emphasis on punishment and control, it's not just ineffective, it's actually harmful, especially for kids who've experienced trauma.
It's a huge shift in thinking,
Right.
and it has the potential to revolutionize the way we approach
It
education.
really does.
It's about recognizing that children are not just empty vessels waiting to be filled with knowledge.
Yeah.
They're complex human beings with unique experiences, strengths, and challenges.
Exactly.
And when we create school environments that honor that complexity, we create spaces where all children can thrive.
Okay, I'm totally on board with this philosophy,
Yeah.
but I'm also a pragmatist. So, how do we actually make this happen? How do we move from theory to practice? What are the concrete steps that schools can take to become more trauma-informed?
Well, the first step is education. We need to make sure that everyone in the school community,
Teachers, administrators, staff, even parents.
yeah, everyone, has a basic understanding of what trauma is
Yeah.
and how it can affect children's behavior and learning.
And that's where professional development comes in, right?
Absolutely.
Schools need to invest in training for their staff, and not just one-time workshops, but ongoing professional development that deepens their understanding of trauma.
Right. It's not just about learning the facts. It's about developing the skills and the mindset to create a truly trauma-informed culture.
Okay, so education is the foundation.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, once you have that foundation of knowledge, you can start to look at your school's policies and practices
Okay.
and ask yourself, are these policies trauma-informed?
So, for example, if a child is having a meltdown in the classroom, the traditional approach might be to send them to the principal's office or give them a detention.
Right, but a trauma-informed approach would be to ask, what's going on for this child right now? What need are they trying to communicate through their behavior?
And how can we support them in meeting that need in a
Exactly.
way that's both safe and respectful?
It's about shifting from a punitive approach to a restorative approach.
I love that.
Yeah, it's about building relationships, not breaking them.
And this all sounds great, but I'm sure there are
Oh,
challenges.
there are definitely challenges.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, it takes time.
Right.
You can't just flip a switch and suddenly become a trauma-informed school.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing process of learning, growth, and change.
And I imagine it requires a lot of buy-in from everyone involved,
Absolutely.
from the teachers to the administrators to the parents, even the students themselves.
You need everyone on board, working together towards a common goal.
And that's not always easy, is it?
No, it's not. There will be resistance, there will be setbacks. But the key is to stay committed to the vision
To believe that a more trauma-informed approach is possible,
and that it's worth the effort.
because ultimately it's about creating a more just and equitable world for all children.
That's the heart of it.
It really is. Okay, I want to go back to something you said earlier about how a trauma-informed approach can help children expand their window of tolerance. Can you explain that a little more?
Sure. So the window of tolerance is that zone of arousal where a child feels safe, regulated, and able to learn.
Got it.
When a child is within their window of tolerance, they can handle everyday stressors and challenges without becoming overwhelmed or dysregulated.
But when they're pushed outside of that window?
By trauma, stress, or triggers, they might experience a fight, flight, or freeze response.
Right, which can manifest as aggression, withdrawal, or anxiety.
Exactly. And the goal of a trauma-informed approach is to help children expand their window of tolerance so they can stay regulated and engaged, even in the face of challenges.
So how do you actually do that? How do you help a child expand their window of tolerance?
Well, there are a lot of different strategies.
Yeah.
But one of the most important is to create a sense of safety and predictability.
In the classroom.
And in the school environment as a whole.
So that means things like clear expectations, consistent routines, and supportive relationships.
Exactly.
Children need to know what to expect.
And they need to feel like they have adults they can trust.
And that those adults will be there for them no matter what.
It's about creating a sense of belonging and connection.
Which is the foundation of any healthy relationship.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've talked about the importance of education. We've talked about the need to review school policies and practices. And we've talked about strategies for expanding children's window of tolerance. What else is essential for creating a trauma-informed school?
I think one of the most important things is to focus on building relationships.
Relationships.
Yeah, relationships between teachers and students.
Uh-huh.
Between staff members.
And between the school and the community.
Exactly. When you have strong, supportive relationships, it creates a foundation of trust and respect.
Right.
Which makes it easier to navigate challenges.
And to support each other through difficult times. Okay, I'm starting to get a really clear picture here of what a trauma-informed school looks and feels like. But I'm curious, how do we measure success? How do we know if our efforts are actually making a difference?
That's a great question, and there's no easy answer. Because trauma is complex.
Right.
And its effects can be subtle and long-lasting. But there are definitely ways to track progress.
Like what?
Well, one way is to look at data. Okay. Things like attendance rates, suspension rates, and academic performance.
Right.
If you see improvements in these areas, it could be a sign that your trauma-informed approach is having a positive impact.
But it's not just about the numbers, is it?
No, it's also about the stories.
The stories?
Yeah, the stories that teachers, students, and families tell.
About how the school environment has changed.
About how they feel safer, more connected, and more supported.
I love that. Because ultimately, it's the stories that bring the data to life.
Absolutely.
They give us a glimpse into the human impact of our efforts.
And that's what really matters in the end.
It really is.
Yeah.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. But before we wrap up, I want to circle back to those amazing case studies that we were talking about earlier. You know, the ones that highlight the transformative power of relational inclusion.
Yeah, those are some powerful stories.
They really are.
They show us what's possible. When we approach children with empathy, understanding, and a belief in their potential.
So let's revisit those stories and see what insights we can glean from them.
Sounds good to me.
So we've been talking about the power of connection and how this pilot program in Tameside is using relational inclusion to create more trauma-informed schools.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I've been thinking about?
What's that?
This idea of connection. It's not just some feel-good concept.
Yeah.
It's actually essential for human well-being.
Absolutely.
There's a whole body of research that shows how connection is wired into our brains.
It's as fundamental to our survival as food and water.
Exactly. And when those needs for connection aren't met,
yeah,
it can have a profound impact on our development.
Especially for children.
Right, especially for kids.
Their brains are still developing.
Yeah.
And those early experiences of connection or lack thereof can really shape their trajectories.
It makes you wonder how much we underestimate that.
I think we do.
Yeah. So for you, having been so deeply immersed in this report, what are some key takeaways that you can apply to your own life and work?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is that trauma matters.
Trauma matters.
Yeah. It's not just something that happens out there in the world.
Right.
It shows up in our classrooms, our workplaces, our families.
It's everywhere.
It really is. It shapes how we interact, how we make decisions, how we see the world.
And, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's hard to grasp the connection between trauma and behavior.
Yeah, it's not always obvious.
Right.
Especially when you're dealing with challenging behavior.
Exactly.
It's easy to get caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
And react in ways that might actually make things worse.
So what's the alternative?
The alternative is to take a step back and ask yourself, what's going on for this person right now? What need are they trying to communicate through their behavior?
So it's about shifting from judgment to curiosity,
Exactly.
from blame to understanding.
And from punishment to support.
I love that.
It's a much more human-centered approach.
And speaking of human-centered, another key takeaway from this report is that connection is key.
It really is.
We all need to feel seen, heard, and understood.
And when we create environments where those basic needs are met,
yeah,
amazing things can happen.
Relationships flourish, learning thrives, communities become stronger.
It's about moving from a culture of control to a culture of care.
From isolation to belonging.
And that's something we can all strive for.
Absolutely. Whether you're a teacher, a parent, a manager, a friend, understanding the impact of trauma and prioritizing connection can help you build stronger, healthier relationships.
It's about recognizing our shared humanity.
Yeah.
And showing up for each other with empathy and compassion.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of relational inclusion, what's your final takeaway for our listeners?
I think it's this. The work being done in Tameside offers us a glimpse into a more hopeful future.
A future where we approach each other with more understanding, kindness, and grace.
It's a future worth striving for.
It really is. And the report focuses on schools. But I think these principles can be applied to so many other areas of life.
Oh, absolutely.
Imagine if we applied these principles to social services, to healthcare, to the justice system.
What kind of world could we create?
Right.
If we truly understood and addressed the root causes of suffering.
It's a powerful question to ponder.
It is.
So as you continue to explore the ideas presented in this report, we encourage you to think about how you can apply these principles to your own sphere of influence. How can you create more connected and compassionate environments?
In your own life, your own work, your own community.
It's an invitation to make a difference, one connection at a time.
Beautifully said.
And on that note, we'll wrap things up. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the world of relational inclusion. We hope you found it informative, inspiring, and thought-provoking.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, keep diving deep.